So Scott, while he's on the phone, did I hear him correctly say that you guys are basically staffed 24/7 on Orcus?
Yeah.
At the station.
At the station. At station 21.
Yeah.
Is that with paid folks or a combination of paid and on and paid on call folks?
Yeah, so
or what does that make up?
So we have four shifts. Yeah. And each shift has two career individuals. One of them is the paramedic battalion chief, and the other one is the EMT fire officer. So they're both fire, both dual certified individuals. And so we have two career individuals on shift 24/7. And then we also have some volunteers that they can choose to do a shift either at home or at the station. And so occasionally we'll have two or three additional people at the station to respond with. But yeah, the station staffed in-house 24/7, 365.
Because I'd be curious on seeing how that financial model works. Is that is incredible. I didn't realize you guys were able to pull that off.
Our current budget for the year, for this year, is around $2,345,000.
Which, if it's interesting, because that was the same budget as EMS.
Here.
And the same budget as fire.
Yeah.
So, you know, here you're looking at $4 million.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're finished answering the question.
I can't even remember.
It was just a question about quality, and I guess what I'm trying to think through a little bit is, are you able to, based on your knowledge, see difference in quality outcomes based on different models, looking at Orcus, looking at Lopez, looking at Santa Juan, and what do you see as the driver in those outcomes?
So I think that we have well-trained responders on all the units. Absolutely. Our resuscitation rate for cardiac arrest is 50%. We enjoy urban-level resuscitation rates, which is great. That's for the whole county, not for this island. I do see issues, and it's, you know, I don't want to go to the negative, but emergency medicine, it's a continuous learning process. So if you stop learning, you're losing, you know. And the more you don't learn, the more that you just kind of sit there, the more you're losing. You always have to, you know, be in it to win it. And medicine is changing rapidly. Things that we did for cardiac arrest 6 months ago, we don't do anymore. It's like that's how quick it's happening. Every 6 months, there's a change in what we do, and so you have to be on it, and that requires a quality management system, a quality assurance reviews, somebody looking, you know, that they always have their eye on the ball. What you just saw here, that's my eye on the ball, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I take phone calls from the paramedics in the field, and we discuss, hey, this is what we think is going on. This is vital signs. This is my plan. And then if I think that they didn't ask certain questions, I get input. That's crazy. Nobody else gets that. Nobody in this region gets that.
You do that for all the islands?
Except for San Juan. San Juan has the ability to do that by calling the ED and talking to one of my ER docs, but they choose not to. And many times they choose not even to notify us that they're coming in, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. So there's some issues with that and the leadership right now. Again, like I said, I don't want to go negative, but I learned the model that I use now at the University of Pittsburgh. And at the University of Pittsburgh, we ran the City of Pittsburgh EMS, and we had a medical command, and we had a resident that would respond 24 hours a day into the field and augment paramedic role. And then they also gave online medical control for every paramedic call. And then there was a faculty backup, which was me, listening to the resident give the advice, and if I thought the resident wasn't giving good advice, I'd like chip on the radio before cell phones. And that model worked great. And I just saw a lot of people's lives saved because sometimes it's only one or two questions. You got to have the right question. And, you know, somebody's getting lightheaded and falling down, and they're thinking it might be alcohol intoxication, but they didn't check their conjunctiva and find out that they're actually, they're an alcoholic, but they're actually having a gastrointestinal hemorrhage. You're missing that. When you're in isolated islands, especially when there's bad weather, you really kind of have to go deeper into what's going on with the patient. And for the paramedics to feel that somebody has their back, how awesome is that? Instead of just worrying, like, I don't know what's going on, and I'm going to send everybody that I go on. And there are paramedics that do that. Put them in the brig. We're taking everybody. And then there are other ones that, you know, by the skin of their teeth, they're like, you know, they can figure it out, or they leave everybody, and then they have a lot of quality management reports, you know, from the doc. But I think tight medical control is kind of what grew up in Seattle, where my involvement got started, you know, with my COPUS. I started down at Harborview in the late 70s, and that's kind of what I learned from him, and then I kind of continued that, you know, on the East Coast, so... That's kind of where the value comes in.
Yeah, and just to clarify, none of us, I think, are trying to be negative or critical. We're really trying to get to this idea of how do we achieve better outcomes? How can we look ahead?
Yeah.
How can we get quality going forward? So it's not, you know, none of your comments are seen, at least here, as negative. I mean, we're all trying to think through. As we're having this discussion, maybe just organizationally, but I think we're really trying to look at a bigger picture here, which is how can we advance the ball and how can we provide the best quality care we can for our residents? How do we measure that? And then how can we continue to grow it?
And the secret sauce, the secret to success in quality is people. And you have to cultivate your people. And you have to choose the correct metrics to measure. You have to measure them. When you have somebody that's screwing up, you have to call them on the carpet, and you have to deal with it right there. Because if you let a bad apple sit in your apple barrel, what's going to happen? It's going to cause a problem. So again, it all comes back to leadership, a leader that will do all of those things. We have all the ingredients to have high quality. I mean, like national picture quality healthcare here in the islands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. You know, back to something you said earlier, response rate. I hear 2 minutes, 20 minutes is never acceptable. We have a new facility here, and you know, regardless if this goes under fire or stays where it is right now, the EMS system. Do you see value in the fact that we should have a paramedic, an EMT, and people in the house next to the police?
Hell yes. Hell yes. Because when I call 911, I want them to get the page, and I want them to get in the vehicle, and I want them to come to me. Right. I don't want them to, like, hold on, I'm cooking dinner. Maybe I'm going to go, maybe I'm not going to go. I'm not sure what I'm doing today. You know, I want them to be tasked, you know, it's in their mind, I'm on duty, and I'm here to help you. Heck yeah. Yeah. That's one of my major issues.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, Dr. Sullivan, you've been on the island for a number of years and have seen both of these organizations and the culture, so the firefighters and EMS. You alluded to that... you know, the volunteer recruitment, retention, and training is vital. However, when you try to bring two organizations together with potentially different cultures, different ideas, different thoughts, I know it goes back to leadership, but what do you see as some of those potential pitfalls that would need to be considered if you do try to merge these two organizations? Because you do know both of them, I think, fairly well. So just any ideas or thoughts you have on that? And I know it all goes back to leadership, but what should be considered in that?
Yeah, I think right now there's a lot of fears. There's a lot of talk out there with you know, if there is a vacuum of information, people are going to make crap up. And that's what's going on right now. And when I look at EMS, I basically look at who were the EMTs of the year for the last 5 years. Are they still with the agency? You know, are we losing veteran EMTs? And I've only heard rumors. I don't know enough. I've really kind of taken myself out of that role. I'm way too busy with other things. But I'm concerned that that's what's happening. And it really, again, it's building that culture that keeps those people there. And I think you allay the fears instead of just wiping the slate clean and say, all right, we're done, and fire's taken over, and if you want to apply, great. I don't think that's the right approach. I think you have to honor what people have done in the community and find a role. There's a role for everybody in the community to, you know, help in emergency response. So that's the tack that I would take. There's a lot of fear right now, I think. On both sides. But it's really, you know, when I see an emergency call go out, I see lots of different tasks that need to be done, okay? There's some medical tasks. There's some operational command tasks. There's lots of different things. And once you kind of start explaining that to people, the firefighters, like, I don't do medicals. Like, there's lots of other things that you can do there. I mean, lots of stuff. We need manpower for, you know, carrying stuff, and, you know, it frees up the EMTs to do EMT tasks. So you really kind of have to kind of connect with the people, you know, in a meaningful way. That's going to be the key.
A couple questions, and again, I think from Chuck's perspective, if you want to tap out on these.
Do the high sign. I'm shy.
Yeah.
So, in the structure that exists within this county, there is elected officials that come on to boards that may or may not have knowledge of what is fire or EMS. They are, they serve a term, but they develop the leadership. They are what is supposed to hold things accountable. They are supposed to have the responsibility as elected officials to do the right thing. Is that a good system to deliver health care? You know, Pittsburgh, you keep suggesting, but it was a third-party system. It had a health UPMC. It had a health system behind it that really made the critical decisions about health care.
Yeah.
If you're designing this, where is the leadership of health care, and where does it, where can it interject itself to ensure that quality of health care is being delivered? You as the medical person for this county has, you know, square-shouldered responsibility.
It starts, again, with a passionate champion. Every single time. Every single high-functioning EMS system throughout the United States of America has some physician passionate champion. For Seattle, it was Mike Kopas. For King County, it was Tom Ray and Mickey Eisenberg. For Wake County, I could go through a whole bunch of names, but yeah, it takes somebody that is will selflessly put themselves out there, will generate lots of initiatives, will bring people together, and create excitement.
That's, were they all healthcare individuals? I don't know them specifically.
Yeah, all of the
that you named?
Yes, they're all based out of Harborview.
So where's our champion?
It's supposed to be me, but it's not working for San Juan.
And why is that?
Well, because they didn't want to listen to anything that I had to say. And so when I split off, and I don't think anybody ever even read my resignation letter at the meeting. I really wish they would have, because I listed all the reasons why I'm sorry I can't continue in this role if you're going to just basically tell me to shut up, because I see a lot of problems, and you know, they decided they're going to do it a certain way. And there was a final meeting where they told me that, you know, I've got my contract and it says I should be doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I should be doing this, I should be advising on this. And I've got input because I get it from, I've got friends all over the country that do this stuff. And we talk all the time to solve problems. And they felt that, no, we don't want your input. Even in budget matters, like how do you do a budget? I mean, I've got some experience in doing that. I was running a fire department as a fire commissioner. I know how to do the budgets. And they were having some serious problems. And I saw the writing on the wall. I mean, I had access to look at things. And I'm like, you guys are going 80 miles an hour into a brick wall. Let's hit the brakes now.
So did that letter go then to the elected official?
Yes, it did, to the commissioners. So, and then I did not one person called me and said, hey, Sully, what the hell's going on? What's up? And that's...
And so is that a good system?
It's not a good system. It's not a good system. So, when people just kind of don't...
Dr. Sullivan, can you explain how it works though? Because you're appointed by Department of Health, right, as the medical control officer for the county.
No, it's different. So... I'm appointed as the medical program director for licensing and certification of the paramedics. Then my role, so I have two roles.
Okay.
My second role with Orcas Fire is I'm their supervising physician. I'm their fire department physician.
Okay.
In addition, I run an occupational health and fitness program, which is separate from my role as supervising physician, which is separate from my role as medical program director. Medical program director brings me in an awesome $425 a month in the state of Washington.
Well, no, that's, you know, you can afford to live here.
Shoot myself in the head and say, I can't do that anymore. But I can because I'm invested and I live here and I can't do that. When I'm on Lopez, I am their supervising physician, but for offline and training, and then Bob Wilson was their online medical control because they were all his patients.
Right.
Now that has changed, and I'm now, everything that I do for Orcas, I'm doing for Lopez because the University of Washington doesn't want Bob Wilson to take medical control. And so there's fires everywhere. There's all sorts of things going on.
That's an interesting situation in Minnesota. If you go on and on, it's not...
But I'm just looking for, you know... trying to provide that input. Is the input valued? Is there good discussions that are going on? It makes me feel like everybody's on the same page. That was not going on here on San Juan. Okay. And some of the issues was the EMS chief at the time. Some of the issues, there were access to grind with individuals against the chief. And then kind of went into the interim phase. The person that was in that role had absolutely zero training to do that job and wouldn't accept any outside help.
This is the role,
I can't watch
role of supervising, sorry, the role of supervising physician? Or which role are you talking about?
So I was a supervising physician for San Juan EMS.
The person who has that role now, is it that role that we're talking about as physician?
Because the Department of Health role is licensing.
Right.
Certification, discipline, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dan.
So, San Juan EMS paramedics go on call. If there's an improper drug therapy, something happens, who's ultimately responsible? Yeah, the controlling physician, the hospital district.
You have to discipline them,
right? Who's the supervising?
Yeah. You would discipline them, but you're not overseeing them? That makes no sense.
Well, they all function under my license, okay? Yeah. Every single EMS provider in the county functions under my medical license. And I review all of the calls that happen in the county, whether I'm your supervising physician or not. Or it comes to me, hey, something happened. Somebody got a sedative rather than a pain medicine and they showed up unconscious, you know. It's still my job as the MPD to either have something called an MPDD, which is a medical program director delegate. And so I get this information and I call up, hey, Bob, there's a problem. You're the MPDD. Investigate and inquire. You know, have some sort of advocacy for that process, have an established process that you go through, and then, you know, things work out. But that's, you have to have agencies that are willing to follow those rules. And right now we don't on San Juan Island.
I think we're in an interesting place, though, right now, because I think there's change in the wind. With respect to all of the leadership that you've mentioned so far, pretty much, and opportunities would seem to be there for some appropriate
things. Yeah, this is perfect.
To have this would be the right time.
Be here at this table.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think we get the sense of what you're saying. And one of the reasons, of course, Orcus represented here as well as we do is. If that's the model that you think makes the most sense for San Juan as well, then the new leadership might have that opportunity as they come aboard to do that right now. Well, not right now, but next year, as soon as they can.
And I've been talking for years, if you want to take it even further, why do we have three agencies for this small county? Why isn't there one agency? And when I was a fire commissioner, you know, we brought multiple fire districts together on the mainland and, you know, made, you know.
Yeah, I think Ray Charles sees that, but for some reason.
Well, no, and it kind of goes back to every island is different, right? So that, there would be a...
There are some cultural...
Probably take about 10 years to do, but
cultural issues.
Can I just follow up this thought? So... You had a responsible board not respond to the medical quality care for this county. Now now we're suggesting that it's going to go to another board if we moved over that may not have any medical people involved with it and so forth. Is there a mechanism that you see that if in these recommendations as the CAG builds what its, you know, outcome product is, that helps to assure that every resident of the county gets the quality of care and sees the best outcomes that it can get?
Well, if there's good communication lines between a physician and a fire chief, and good communication lines between fire chief and his board of commissioners. And board of commissioners that value input from both the community and from their members, we're not gonna have any problem. The issue with the public hospital district, it's gone through so many different challenges and so many issues, and it just, there's always something going on. And kind of going back and forth, and the leadership was polarized. It was a polarized leadership, whether it's stuff dealing with the hospital or stuff dealing with EMS or people just kind of defending people just because that's what they're going to, this is what we do, we'll, you know, we're going to defend you, and not seeking out counsel and kind of getting the whole story. You know, that stuff goes on. It's going to be ragged. But if you can get a communication model between the medical profession, fire service, and the fire board, and we're all on the same page, we're good. And, I mean, those are elected people, and You look at the commissioner board over on Orcas. Initially, they were all within the health and fitness program, so I got to examine everyone because they're all other doctors. So I come in and I'd have one-on-one with all of them. And in fact, that's why the one of the reasons I wanted to start that is I get to meet with every single provider in that agency once a year, and I can ask them any question I want with a white coat on. And sometimes I'm not asking them medical questions. I'm asking them, how is things going? How, you know, do you see any problems? So, and that's what the chief should be doing as well. But yeah, if you build that type of system, you're going to have, you know, really good value. They've got like some amazing credentials on their board over there. And we've got incredible, amazing people on this island. And I think they don't necessarily come to the table because they see the stirring, you know, and they're like, I just don't want to kind of, I don't want to read about myself in the paper, or I don't want to have, you know, I don't have time for controversy, or, you know, but there are people out there that they could bring a lot, you know.
Do you see yourself then with what you've said as an advocate if we start to, or if this needs to be promoted in front of the general resident body for different things as an advocate, if it was going the way you saw it to go, would you see yourself as being able to participate in that?
I would be the first person out there. I'd be driving an open cab, 1953 American LaFrance fire truck, which you will see in the parade next year. And I would hit every single citizens group on the island. And I'd say, this is your opportunity. This is it. It's not going to get any better than this. This is what we have to do to move forward. You know, because it's not working the way it is.
Next question. Looking at it positively, what value of the existing EMS system would you see as, or what components would you see if the Citizens Advisory Group looks at the recommendation, what would you see as the potential upsides to come over from EMS? What would be those things that you would see as these are the value components, bring them into whatever is going to be moving forward?
Well, I think some of the individuals, again, it's always your most valuable instruments are people, always. It's not equipment, not things like that. So I think that there are some really valuable people at San Juan EMS, great people. And they just need kind of that, you know, kind of reduction in fear and like, this is what we're going to do, kind of that roadmap. And I think some of the equipment that they have, it needs to be updated. But we've got, you know, people that understand the island, understand the islanders, know the island. I mean, if you have, you go from EMS responders that are doing what, like 1,000 calls a year, and I don't know how many calls you have for the fire department, but you know, just being out on the road and kind of, you know, knowing the island, knowing where addresses are. And what the challenges are when the address comes in, they know right away, I know that that's going to be a problem, driveway, and we're going to have to, you know, put something down on the road because people will drive right by it. You know, that kind of inside knowledge, that's huge. That's what you need.
Are there enough individuals, do you feel, that would be part, that you would recommend coming over, that would be able to build a total system? 75% system, a 50% system, or a 25% system? Just broadly asking.
I think
from a healthcare medical provide, you know, medical director, county medical director perspective.
I think you'd have to sit down with each one and really kind of ferret out what their issues are. Do they have any hidden agendas? How supportive are they going to be of the process? Because, again, it may not be everyone, because there could be some bad apples there that are going to be working. You know, you're going two steps forward and they're dragging you one step back. And they're doing it with a smile on the face saying, I'm supporting you all the way. But that's what's happening behind your back.
You think that's 75%? And I only asked the question because as you make the recommendation, you have to be able to design the system that it gets you to where you need to be and not lose anything in the interim doing it as well. So 50%, your gut.
You know, I can't really say, you know, I would say there's I don't know how many EMTs are also EMT firefighters. I mean, I think we already kind of got.
I'm just looking at the general population of EMS.
Yeah,
internal.
And I have not been there for a while to really judge that.
Okay.
But before, when I was involved, you know, I would say there was always kind of two or three people that, you know, everything out of their mouth was a little bit negative. You know, but again, that's leadership. You bring them in the chief's office and you sit down and go, hey, how you doing? It's like, this is what I'm seeing. And, you know, quarter turn of the screwdriver, and you can fix those things. Mm-hmm. You know, because maybe they're upset about this, that, or the next thing. You address that. So I think, you know, all of that's fixable. And I would not be exclusive. I would be inclusive. I would bring everybody. And then tell everybody up front, this is what we're going to do. And everybody's got to be on board. And I'm going to be checking whether or not you're on board. I'm checking your ticket.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it frequently. And it's when you kind of get lost in all the other things and you let that slide, that's when you get your problems.
And equipment-wise, the same question. Do you think, you said someone needs to be replaced. Is it a fair percentage, would you say, or?
You know, I think they're cardiac monitors. You know, when you look at big ticket items, it's been on the agenda for some time.
Yeah.
So that needs to be replaced. I'm sure they've got that in some sort of capital expenditure fund or something. But there's certain things.
Watching their budgets, I'm not certain that's the case. But at least they've got a long term projection. But
we didn't exactly. see that.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you for being candid.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. At least in my own mind, it helps to answer some questions.
And we want to be really respectful of your time, and we know you have a little show to do this weekend, so we don't...
You saved me. I told my wife, you know, I can't.
I'm certain that
went over real well.
So, I can be in this wedding spin right now, but I'm not, and I'm not going tomorrow either, because I have to recover.
Can I ask one more thing, which I think is relevant to patient outcomes when we talk about medical services here, and we've talked for about an hour and haven't mentioned them, but Peace Health, we haven't talked about the role of Peace Island Medical Center in EMS or anything about
It's changed everything on this island.
Well, I know, and it seems relevant to how we should be viewing the entire, if you step back from the system, it's not looking at just San Juan EMS or something.
If you wanted to look at the system before the hospital,
yeah,
the EMS providers, that's all you had. And right. I really didn't realize this until one time I was over here on their training day and a little kid climbed up on the roof of a car right next to the EMS building where the museum is now and then slid and fell off, hit his head. And I was watching the whole thing. I'm like, I gotta watch this. Boom! Screaming. Somebody picks him up, rushes him into the climb. And then the page goes out. And then the paramedics go in to evaluate the patient. There was no real emergency medicine. There was lots of fear, you know, because they just didn't see these things. And so what the EMS responders did is they handled it all. And then all of a sudden there's this hospital and they're not handling it all anymore. Their volumes are going down in critical patients because people get in their car and they drive. And the people that don't have a car call 911. Mm-hmm. And the people that are really sick, can't walk, are in too much pain, they call 911. But everybody else, they just drive in.
Right.
So your call volume goes down. The number of critical calls go down, and I would probably say a third of their call volume is picking people up at the hospital and bringing them to the airport at least 20 to 30% of their calls. And there's no value there. You're just being a taxi driver. You're just bringing a flight team back and forth. So what that does is it dilutes your ability to continue to maintain your experience. And so there has to be a switchover in training to kind of make up for that. And that's not the value of the training is really important. And so I'm not.
Well, it occurred to me as you were talking about medical control issues and other things, especially with your background in Pittsburgh and stuff, that you've got a facility here that has that capability, it seems. I mean, we have a staff of ER docs and stuff available. So that would seem to be a connection in the continuum of patient care that should affect outcomes. I mean, it just should. And does it also help EMS do better at what they could be doing? And how does that work? And, that sort of thing, which probably ought to be factored into thinking, at least, for whatever system comes out of all of this. It just seems like it should be on the table.
Okay. I totally agree. Right.
There's something that's come up in this group that came up today again in discussion with Jeff Sargent over Skagit EMS. ALS stay under the hospital, BLS goes over to the fire. What's your experience with splitting something like that?
I just think we're too small to have something like that. I mean, it's just all one, one responder. Mm-hmm. I've seen agencies that have tried that, and you get mixed results because again, you're exclusive. You're on two different sides. So the paramedics funnel education to the EMTs, and they got to be kind of together to do that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that would be an ideal model.
Is there any value, though, with having the paramedics in the ER? Wouldn't that be a value to both organizations, both Peace Health and if the paramedics were under whatever system, because now the paramedics get firsthand experience with those emergencies that are just being driven in? It also provides staffing and resources to a hospital system. Is there any synergies there? And again, it keeps them more active and more engaged, those type of things. I mean, you would think there'd be a lot of synergies there and a lot of ways to help both organizations achieve those better outcomes and also meet some of the critical staffing needs.
So I have lots of experience with that type of model. MedFlight out of St. Joe's was that model where the nurses and a paramedic responded out of the ER. And then there was problems with that model. I've seen at Jefferson Hospital, just south and west of Pittsburgh, they had paramedics in the ER, and they responded with fly cars out of there and had the BLS, guys go out, and they would respond and augment that ALS response. And they all have different pluses and minuses. What you see with different healthcare corporations is they don't know what to do with that, and they don't want to take the liability of that, and there's just no role in the integration, vertical integration. It's like, where do they fit? That's been the problem. You got the emergency department nurses organizations. You can't have paramedics in here, and you can't have a paramedic doing an IV. But certain locales it does work. Western Washington, it doesn't really work. That's kind of where I first started out, actually, was in the emergency department and then branched out into the fire agency. And I always thought that wouldn't it be great because you're seeing so many things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have the volume here that it would be a greater benefit. I would rather develop a fire officer paramedic kind of in a leadership role. And then they would have a broader umbrella of what they're doing as an all-hazard. Yeah.
Good question.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. We may
in the future ask you to make a return trip, if that's a possibility.
Well, I'm... Heck yeah, I'm in it to win it. I'm doing it every day, so I would love an outlet. I'm actually, my wife would love for you to hear it rather than her. So.
I thought you just wanted you out of the house.
Go get some more tennis
balls. Glad I didn't hear that.
Okay. I get her worked up, and then it's like, oh God, I should have never brought that.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Take care, Dr. Sullivan.